closer.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Nobody did believe that we had no time to do interviews. If it's any consolation, I'm currently driving on the 101 to the 405 back to Magic Obelisk, and you're in Vancouver, I think?
Well, not anymore. I'm now at sea, back on a ship. We were in Vancouver for about 4 hours, most of which was spent going through U.S. immigration. They've got some rule where you have to get off and get on and be viewed by U.S. border security. And then that ended up taking about 2 hours of getting redirected by different people, all of whom gave me different directions on what to do. Standard procedure. It's fine.
So yeah, everybody pretends to know an answer, and then they don't. So.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's okay.
That's always like, that's one of my big travel tips, is don't believe anything anyone tells you at any point without at least double or triple checking it with other people.
Like, yeah, that's maybe the best thing I've ever figured out. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, don't necessarily assume they're wrong, but absolutely don't assume they know what the fuck they're talking about. Even if they seem really confident, at least get a second opinion from someone.
Because if you really, I mean, especially if you talk to, like, guest services or something, it's their job to be confident, and it's their job to, like, know the answers, even if they don't. So I feel like you get really good at kind of reading the room and go, I don't think you fully understood the question I just asked.
Yeah. It's funny, actually, there's this, I've been thinking a lot recently about the different brands or different kinds of confidence. You get that sort of chipper confidence of the guest services type person, and I've learned to deeply distrust that confidence. Very outwardly confident people set off my alarm bells now. I think they're selling some bullshit. Whereas you have that kind of calm, quiet confidence of someone who knows what they're doing and doesn't feel the need to prove it to anybody. And you can sort of spot that once you're looking for it a lot of the time. Not all the time.
Yeah, I think that's one of the weird skill sets. Oddly useful skill sets I think you gain doing this for so long is you're able to really read people and not trust them if they don't seem trustworthy.
Yeah. So once again, we're recording in a small chunk of time snatched from the chaos of our respective lives. We've been trying for a couple of days, but then you were busy, and then I was at sea, and then you were something else, and I was something else, and this is really our last chance for a couple of days, so we're just jumping on it. Even though you're driving, I'm in the bowels of a ship on a janky Wi-Fi signal recording on my laptop microphone, which isn't ideal, but here we go. We're getting it done, because that's what professionals do. You keep going. Life is very rarely ideal, but you do it anyway.
The busier I get, the more I realize this is the only way to get stuff done is to look at the moment. Okay, so like today, for example, I drove home between shows, and I did this kind of cool thing in the morning. I taught an actor some sleight of hand, and then I ran home, and I'm like, I have a 2-hour window, but I really need to nap because I feel terrible. And so this is, I don't know, this could be a terrible episode, but we're getting it done. Before I forget, I want to say that this episode is brought to you by Darren Brown's new show in New York. The promotion people were very kind to reach out to us and say, hey, do you want some free tickets? And neither one of us live in New York, but my sister does. And so she went on our behalf. And,
by your sister, you mean our producer.
Our producer. And I said, I told that to, I believe the press person's name was Nicole. I said, my sister is a producer on the show, and she would love to come see it. So,
producer surrounded by very heavy air quotes.
By producer, she listens to the show.
That's true.
But she said it was great, and there's a couple classic Darren Brown bits, and then some really new, clever stuff, and I won't give anything away, but a pretty great ending that I thought was very clever, and I will speak to you off mic about. So.
I like it. Well, yeah, it's funny. We at some point, we might tell the story of we tried and failed to pull off a cool thing, which I'm still determined that we're going to do that, because now that Darren's in the U.S., I think it's also the thing with getting contacted by the producer was this is the first time this podcast has been kind of actually legitimized. This is the first time that we were approached by a serious production organization, seriously looking to publicize a serious show and contacted us. just made me smile a little bit.
Well, I thought it was a mistake. So I responded, and then I didn't hear anything. And then my sister reached out a couple days ago. She's, oh, have you heard of this guy, Darren Brown? And I go, oh, actually, we were given tickets, but I never heard anything back. So I reached out to the lady, and she apologized. She's like, oh, my email must have went in spam or something. So she hooked us up. And
wow.
So that felt good. It was validated that it was not a mistake and that we were meant to be a part of this press junket for Darren's new show, which was pretty cool.
That's hilarious. Well, I mean, it makes sense, right? They'd be who knows what their publicity regime is. They'd be contacting anything magic-related in any way. And I guess, I mean, there's not that many magic podcasts, I suppose. There's probably half a dozen. I wouldn't even have a clue. I'm just guessing completely off the top of my head.
Yeah, honestly, who knows? I mean, because you would think, I guess he brought somebody up on stage last night, and then he said something along the lines of, you have very unique hands, what do you do? And the guy goes, I'm a magician. He goes, oh, okay, yeah, I had a feeling there was something different. I'm going to have to send you back to your seat. And so it didn't seem like they, you know, wanted magicians. Mm. They weren't banning magicians by any means, but it didn't seem like that was their target kind of press market. So,
well, yeah, I mean, it's a real thing about that sort of professional courtesy in an ideal world of sort of letting someone know if you're in the magical arts before they bring you up. Just if not, I mean, yeah, I'm willing to help a friend out, but I just know that I'm not going to react the way a normal person would react because we can't. We know too much.
Yeah, and it you should have the sense, if you're a magician, to not help out a magician on stage. If you can't help, if you're the only one there, that's obviously, you can't do anything about it. But if you're in a theater of, I don't know, 500 or 1,000, maybe give someone else a chance.
Yeah, big time.
And then I should promote our Bloomington show again, which is September 26th, 27th, 28th? Is that it? Friday,
right.
Saturday.
If you are near Bloomington, weeks. Indiana, it will be a cool experience.
And I just realized, I mean, we've talked about this before, where they said Simon Cornell's Magic Showdown, and it's just
featuring the most spectacularly goofy photo of me that has ever appeared on a publicity piece.
I don't know where that photo came from, because I've never seen it before in any of your promotion, and it's pretty great.
I do. I'm 99% sure it's a photo from when I was in Bloomington at the same theater working with the great, fantastic team there at Bloomington Playwrights Project. Shout out to Chad and Brad and Tab and everybody. They all have short names that have hard consonants in them. And I was working on a solo show there that they did a lot of press photos of. And I'm pretty sure that photo has been cropped out of one of the photos of that other show I did. So they have that in their archives. And then just photoshopped in the ludicrous background that's currently there.
It's going to be fun. It's a more theatrical version of this group show we've been writing. And it's neat to see how this is. It's weird how there is something to, like, goal setting. As much as I want to ignore goal setting and say it's kind of ridiculous, but just the idea of putting something out into the universe and saying, okay, I want to make this happen. Like, at the beginning of the year, I wrote down a bunch of things, and one of them was I want to expand the show. And ever since I wrote that down, we've, you know, more and more have happened. We have a few other ones on the books, too. So it's, I don't think it's crazy. There's something to that.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, it is by far the most commercially viable show-related thing I've ever been involved with and or been part of the idea, been part of the conception of, by miles. Like, this is a thing that just would sell tickets anywhere. Like, we've probably talked about this. This is probably on 2 Mag 1 Mic Bingo somewhere, about trying to think of creating, if in doubt, create things like a Pixar movie. Plays for smart people, plays for dumb people, plays for adults, plays for kids. Is good to everybody, even if it's for different reasons. Because if you're a good creator, there's no reason, in theory, you can't create something that's appealing to an incredibly wide bell curve of people.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the most interesting things about performing in the United States is that if you travel enough, you meet so many different types of people. But if if you're able to get your performance to work for that many different types of people, I think that's there's something to that, and that goes a little bit more beyond than just being kind of a slice of cake for everybody. I know, to each his own. It's certainly not going to appeal to everybody, but I think if there's like a median line that you're hitting and the show works, I think there's something pretty powerful about that.
Yeah, big time. And that is also a note to my past self. For God's sake, younger Simon, you fucking moron. Create things that have wider mainstream appeal. You don't have to be an artsy hipster and make it inaccessible.
Yeah, I mean, you see that a lot here, where I'll see something at the castle or in a show and go, hey, that's pretty brilliant, but I don't know where that's going to work anywhere else outside of here. And if that's your intent, that's great. That I think that's a good exercise. But if your goal is to perform to like a wider type of people, then that doesn't necessarily, that's not pointing you in the right direction.
Yeah. Well, that's also something I think about more and more as time goes on, is trying to kind of think ahead to what will, you know, right now I am 2019 Simon, I'm me now. What will 5 years from now, what will 2024 Simon wish 2019 Simon had not been a complete goddamn idiot about? Like, what will future me wish past me had figured out earlier? And try and think ahead to that, because at least a big chunk of your current beliefs will turn out to be complete bullshit. And trying to think ahead, to waste as little time in getting to that point where you learn more about what of your current beliefs are just wrong and unproductive.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because we had a death in the family last week, and we went home, and it's weird how, you know, I've been surrounded by Hollywood for 4 years, and then you go home, and I had this conversation with my wife of, I think people, like, back where I'm from in the Midwest, people are, you know, their guard is certainly up more, because I think they've been burned more, and they're not around people as much, and they're less trusting. But once you break through that, they are, I think, fundamentally better people than the people in Hollywood, for the reason of, you know, they are going to have your back, and I think there's more of an unconditional love thing, as opposed to here, where it's like, okay, how can this person help me and get me from A to B to C? And we were talking about this a couple weeks ago at the castle. We're just getting a little bit, you and I are getting a little bit burned out by this fakeness here, and it's getting difficult to navigate. Okay, who's trying to use me? Who am I trying to use without realizing it? And how do I stop that? How do I just be a better goddamn human?
Yeah, true that. God, there's so, and my brain's now going, there's so much so many stories to tell and so much to talk about. I don't even know where to start. You said you needed to vent.
Well, that's kind of it. I mean, there was something that happened in the magic office yesterday that I can't really go into detail. It was something like really great and really beautiful, and then kind of blew up in my face a little bit over kind of a misunderstanding. And it's a reminder of how kind of touchy egos can be. Nobody in particular, just kind of, you know, it just comes from people working together for a very long time on a project, and everything's fine now. Everybody's happy. Hugs were had, and discussions were, everything was talked over. But that kind of just spun my thought process about Hollywood egos, and well, just how kind of ridiculous this place is sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, egos are things that sometimes you can't avoid them, but if you have any creative control over anything, avoid people with them immediately. It's sort of nice to be in a place now where I can just go, nope, not interested. If someone's got the slightest hint of being precious about their reputation or their work or whatever, it's just like, nope, I'm out. Fuck off. Not interested. No time for that BS. You want someone that you can say to each other, dude, this idea you've had sucks. Let's try and fix it. And they go, oh, all right. Or even just going, no, I disagree. I think it's good. Let's talk about this. But again, the separation of the self from the work and the ideas and everything else.
Yeah, and kind of knowing, I mean, that just comes with time, what you were saying of knowing when to walk away. That's a very difficult thing to get to and fully kind of comprehend. And I'm at that place too of I feel like I'm getting to that place of just knowing when, oh, this isn't for me, or this is not what it claims to be.
Yeah. Yeah, completely.
So.
God. So, I mean, the other thing news-wise that's been happening of note is those of you listening who remember when Dom Chambers was on the podcast a few months ago. I don't even know whenever it was.
Not too long ago.
Yeah, you may have watched his meteoric rise to fame on America's Got Talent over the past few months, which has been fascinating to watch happen and be to a fairly heavy degree involved with behind the scenes. Kind of what you've been doing on Justin's show is more or less what I've been working on to some degree with Dom, like consulting, directing, designing, working on the actual routines and acts and stuff with him and many other people. It takes a village, and Dom's both a smart guy and a good guy, and so there's a lot of cool people more than willing to leap in to help out and help someone. It's really nice because there's so many just shitty, lame people who end up getting famous and successful in the public eye on Got Talent shows. And so it's such a rare pleasure when someone who's actually a good person and a performer I respect starts to get some success as well. It's just really pleasant to see.
Yeah, Dom's a really good guy. And, man, the tape face segment was so good.
Yeah.
If you've not seen it,
Proud of that.
I encourage you.
I was heavily involved with that behind the scenes. That was an insane cut. I mean, you know what it's like working on any unit. It's a similar thing. It's just absolute non-stop 24/7 insanity to try and get all the thousand things that need to go okay for a segment like that to go okay. And I mean,
well, you're battling it being live. Justin's the shoot schedule for Magic for Humans and the creation schedule is insane, but the only advantage is if we don't get it, It can be reshot. In your case, it's live in front of millions, and that's a whole different level of pressure.
Yeah, it always feels like a situation like that every time I'm involved in something. And I mean, this was in terms of all the things I've ever worked on, this was by far the biggest profile with, you know, however many million people watching. But things like FISM were comparably high stress in terms of how intense it is. There's one shot, it's live, there's no takebacks, no do-overs. And every time it feels like being in a non-life-threatening version of Mission Impossible or Ocean's 11, it always feels like an epic heist espionage movie of like the amount of things that have to come together, the stress, the tension, the split-second timing on things. Always unexpected things go wrong, always, like, I've never been involved in anything that didn't have sudden spanners thrown into the works at the last minute that you suddenly have to scrabble to fix. And it's stressful as hell, but God, I love it. I really enjoy working on stuff like that. Again, I think it's that Mission Impossible fantasy that we all kind of have to some degree, but in a relatively low-stakes, safe environment. You wouldn't want to actually be a secret agent. You'd get shot and killed. But this, when the worst case is just embarrassment in front of millions of people, that's workable. That's okay. That's not too bad. It's not good.
Yeah. It, in today's day and age, at worst, it's going to last about a week and then people will forget about it. But
yeah, exactly.
But still, that doesn't mean the pressure is not there. And
it's
a great thing to be a part of. And I'm glad he did so well and went so far. I was really bummed when, you know, he didn't get to the final level or maybe
the grand semifinals. He made it to the semifinals and then got knocked out there.
Semifinalist on AGT is all you need to get those corporate bookings. So he's good.
Yeah.
Good for a year or so.
Right. Kicks ass. Yeah, so it's been a crazy few weeks. And I mean, it's funny, there's so many of the it's always frustrating because so many of the really great stories can't really be told without either ruining the magic or breaking AGT contractual stuff about what really goes on.
But I mean, I've auditioned for the show a couple times and I've gotten into private rooms and the forms I had to sign to do that, to not even be on television, was insane.
Yeah.
Oh man, but yeah, I can't imagine, you know, being there and it's actually, now that I think about it, it's a really good analogy.
It's exactly like a Mission Impossible movie, but like trying to pull off a magic trick rather than stealing the NOC files from the Soviets or whoever it was in the movie. and without any actual threat of violence. Most of the time.
Well, you never know. Terry Crews is very strong.
He is a very strong, but thankfully very nice man.
He seems like the nicest man on earth. Well, that's good. I'm glad that went well, and I'm bummed he's done, but I'm glad he went. I mean, if you're going to go on the show and not win, that's a pretty good run. You don't want to go on get... Like, I had a couple friends on this season who are just brilliant. Jonathan Burns is one of them who was on the podcast, and I thought for sure he was going to become the next tape face, and I think they used him maybe twice, and then I don't know if he even got voted off. It was just one of those things of, well, we never don't see him anymore.
Yeah. Well, you know, so this is the thing.
It's good that they held on to Dom.
Yeah, well, this is one of the things that we kept noticing and realizing and coming back to throughout the entire process is on shows like that, are just sort of an intensely sort of contrived version of the general world, which is, to paraphrase William Goldman, just no one knows what's going to work. You just don't know. It's completely effing random and unpredictable what will play well. Sometimes things that you think are absolute crap end up just being wildly popular. Sometimes things you think are brilliant just flop. You just never freaking know. And at every point in the journey, we kept realizing that. We just have no idea what's actually going to play to a mass market crowd. It's so hard to predict it. And cinema's known that for decades. Again, William Goldman, Adventures in the Screen Trade, is a great book about the cinema industry and how it works. And he keeps going back to that. He keeps re-quoting that. Now, remember, no one knows what's going to work. Even the ones who seem like they do, they don't. No one knows. It's chaos out there.
Yeah, I mean, when they were shooting Star Wars, everybody on set's like, what the hell is this going to be?
Yeah, completely. No one knows. And I'm sure that, you know, they thought the prequels were going to be good films. They made a lot of money because they knew that it would just sell on the brand alone. But that brand's been getting weaker and weaker as they produce successfully shittier and shittier Star Wars movies. Like, I've now not got no desire to see them anymore. I mean, I'm a hipster that
way. Well, I do like the new ones, but the prequels, yes, are god-awful. But that's just an example of... Well, that was before Disney owned Lucasfilm, so that's just him going, I pay for all the bills, this is my baby, let me do it. Luckily, he had the smarts to sell, say anything you want about George Lucas, but he had the smarts to sell the, you know, Lucasfilm, Star Wars to Disney and say, okay, these are your stories now. And he did that with Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi of... Okay, I'm not going to direct this. There's something to that's kind of where his genius lies. And I think that's where great creator's genius lies of knowing when to pass the baton or get help or, I don't know, figure out what's next for this thing you created.
Like Magic Smackdown.
Hey, I can't wait to pass it on.
Oh, man, that'd be amazing. Because that's the point, right? At that point, you've become so successful that it's a wonderful problem to be facing.
No, yep. we want it to be Blue Man Group where we can get like the best of the best. The reason Blue Man is so picky with their actors and has this 0.5% return rate on the people that audition is because they can be so specific and know exactly what they need. And I think if we were to get to a place like that, with that show or anything you're creating, that's the goal you want to be. You want it to be the vision that you had in your head. You don't want it to be subpar, and you don't want people that aren't right for the roles to be in it.
Yeah, completely. Well, it's the other thing. I think it's an opportunity to actually do that would be good and it would be interesting because Blue Man Group. I think the whole point of it is it's exactly the same show. They train the same sets and the same scenes and the same sequences. Whereas the whole ethos of SmackDown is much closer to a really good improv show or something like Whose Line Is It Anyway, where every show will be at least a bit different and unique. And it's exciting because I think it's much more fun to get really talented performers and put them into a framework where they can really flex their talent muscles. That's much more exciting to me rather than just creating this sort of corporatized, cookie-cutter, stamp-out, Cirque du Soleil Blue Man Group type thing where it's amazing and brilliant but still fundamentally sterile and kind of, I don't know, just factory production lined.
Yeah, and you hear that with, my buddy... Ben Schrader, who runs Magic Bar, he was in, the first cast of Book of Mormon, and he was in Avenue Q, and he did all these crazy, amazing Broadway runs, And he was telling me, he's like, you know, I would, a year or so in, or 6 months in, you do the show and you're done and you don't even remember doing the show because it's just, it's not stale. It's just something you've done 1,000 times. And I think that's what's so great about kind of what we do. And I really gravitate towards performers who are really good at just reacting to the audience. I think it's such a missed thing to ignore what's going on in the room. And that's just the whole thing about Whose Line, and hopefully with what we can accomplish with this show.
And I mean, even without the actual improv magic element, even just that rule we made on our first ever test run of it, that kind of realizing on some deep primal level that we wanted the show not to be just the same thing every night, we made that rule about no one's allowed to do exactly the same set list each night. Just we have to mix it up a bit, because particularly with a genuine competition format, which is what the show is, if you realize the sets the three performers have put together, one is a bit of a stronger or whatever, a set that plays better to the crowd, you kind of know they're probably going to, the results are going to be similar each night. And that removes any of the genuine tension and genuine excitement for the audience and the performers. So just making the rule to mix up the set lists, already that makes the show a bit different every night. And then adding the light sort of dusting of improv elements to the actual routines in some of the segments. Yeah, I'm still really excited about this format. Looking forward to what we can develop it into in Bloomington.
The last thing I want to say before I have to park and quickly go do the show with Eric Buss is I got called in yesterday, got this confirmed from, actually, ironically, a friend from college who's a producer on a TV show, and then she got an email from another producer saying, hey, we need a magician for something. And I taught this magician, actor Brett. He's in Jane the Virgin, and he's in this new show, Schooled. Super cool guy. Hung out with him for 2 hours and taught him how to do sponge balls. And it's a good reminder of, what we do, you know, in our heads, at least in my head, of, this is just a simple, you know, false transfer. Then you steal some things out of your pocket and you're done. And then just 2 hours into working in this, he started to get it, which is great. And it's nice because it proves to me, it's like, okay, I'm not as bad of a teacher as I think I am. But you're reminded of, what we do is actually pretty difficult. And it's a good, at least for me, I had a lot of fun, and it's just a good reminder of, this stuff takes time and effort. And you forget how much time and effort you've put into things. When you're watching somebody learn the thing that you've been doing since you're a little kid, or attempting to learn the thing you've been doing since you were a little kid, and failing for an hour and a half. So and I'm not, certainly not trying to blow smoke up my butt or anything like that, but it was a neat experience, and I hope I get to do more stuff like that. It's very fun to teach people.
That is one of the many reasons why I really still deeply enjoy teaching adult beginner magic classes, and do it whenever I get the chance. Because it really keeps you... One of the most important and elusive traits of a magician is empathy for the audience. You've got a big wall between you and the crowd, a wall of knowledge and expertise and secrecy, and it is hard to get across that, to really imagine what they are experiencing from this performance, this experience. And teaching is something I find really helps with that, really helps connect to the layperson experience of magic on a lot of levels. And it's very, very valuable.
I think they find a new, even if they already had it, they find a new appreciation of, this stuff takes time. And just, I noticed he played guitar. I'm like, you play guitar, you have some guitars here. And I just explained it in a musical sense of you're training yourself in muscle memory, and you're trying to do two things at once, and these are brand new movements for you, stuff your body is very unfamiliar with. And I think once I started turning it in those terms for someone who's not a magician, it was neat to see his kind of change in how his brain was accepting it, and that's when he started to learn the sleight of hand, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, I find it's much easier to teach magic to musicians, mainly because they already have at least some experience of learning a very difficult, utterly unintuitive, unfamiliar thing. And so they're better able to kind of get a sense of that mountain they're about to go climbing than people who haven't climbed any kind of mountain like that in their lives, so don't know how to learn something like that.
Yeah, they have a comprehension of, okay, this is going to take some time and is not going to be perfect on the first, 100 tries.
People who play sports and do martial arts are also usually pretty good, depending on which sport. Like, golf is really good. Most people, because it requires so much more... It's a similar thing of deeply unintuitive skills that take forever to refine and master.
Yeah, it was neat, I hope to do more, but I'm pulling into a parking space. I need to quickly go run over and do another show here at Magicopolis, and have fun on your boat. I hope everything goes well.
Yeah, it's coming along. Got some new things I've figured out. Got new luggage. It's a small thing, but a big deal. That's a whole different story. We'll get to that next time. The story of Simon's luggage optimization.
Yeah, I think we need to talk about it. There is a distinct lack in appreciation for minimalism. So I think doing is a version of minimalism, and I have started to do that too. And it's actually very satisfying.
Yeah, it really is. But anyway, I think this connection seems to be getting a bit choppy, so let's quit while we're ahead. You've got to do shows. I've got to get out of here. Onwards and upwards. Let's keep at it.
All right, buddy. I will talk to you soon.
Peace out. See ya. Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemike.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs, @twomagiciansonemike. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.